Good morning. Thank you for tuning in to 88.5 KRFY. This is Community Conversations, and I'm Chris Spessler, the host today. Community Conversations has pre-recorded interviews and is a stand-in for the morning show that usually airs at this time. That's until the coronavirus abates to the point at which it's safe to be back in the studio again. Today, we continue our local decision coverage for the upcoming May 19th primary election. We have interviews with the two Republican candidates for State Representative in District 7, Seat B, Cornell Razor and Charlie Shepard. Normally, next Tuesday, May 19th, we would all be going to the polls to vote. But due to the coronavirus restrictions, there will be no in-person voting for the primary this year. All voting is being done by absentee ballot. To vote, you must request an absentee ballot be sent to you by mail, and you must do that by 8 p.m. on May 19th. You can do that right now by going to the county elections page at bonnercountyid.gov. The state also has a very good website where you can request a ballot at idahovotes.gov. And there's a ton of information about the election and all the candidates at the Election Central on sandpointonline.com. Just be sure to request that absentee ballot. Remember, you must do so by May 19th, and it has to be returned by June 2nd. And with that, let's start the interviews. District 7 is one of the largest and most oddly drawn districts in the state. The legislators for District 7 represent people who live from Sagal all the way down to Riggins. That's over 200 miles. House seat B has been held by Paul Shepard for 16 years, but Paul is retiring this year, and his son Charlie Shepard is running to assume his father's seat. Charlie lives in Riggins. He faces a former Bonner County Commissioner, Cornell Razor, of Sagal. We start with Cornell, followed by our second interview with Charlie at about the 25-minute mark. Cornell Razor, Republican candidate for District 7 State Representative, thank you for talking with us today. How are you doing today?
I'm doing well, Chris. Thank you.
Well, let's start out with an introduction to voters who may not be well acquainted with you. Tell us about your background and qualifications that you feel are an asset in your candidacy for state representative.
Well, I grew up on a cattle ranch. I'm 63 years old, married. I had 2 years of college. I went to college at North Idaho College and the U of I for veterinary science. Ended up getting married and didn't finish college. Three children and 16 grandchildren later, I'm 39 years in business here in Sandpoint. I've been a manager of a store, a retail store for those 39 years. I've been involved politically for probably 35 years at some level or another, including writing some legislation and attempting to get it through at the state level, becoming a county commissioner. And I teach classes on the Constitution and on state rights and state lands issues and other things like that. I guess that would be as much as I can give you on my background.
Well, question I always ask, why are you running?
I'm running because Charlie is retiring, and I think he did a fairly good job representing Legislative District 7 for many years, even before it was LD7. So at his retirement, I had thought many years back, we talked, and I thought I'd run for that seat, and the seat came open, so I'm running, and also I see an opportunity to serve. I believe I have something to offer to the state, and I'd like to help out as a public servant again.
Okay, fair enough. One question that always occurs to me for District 7, it's a huge district. It stretches from just south of Sagal to more than 200 miles south to Riggins, and it goes east to include Wallace. How would you tackle representing such a big district?
Well, it actually starts north of Sagal. It starts right across the Longbridge on the left there. I would tackle it the same way I did when I represented it as the Legislative District 7 chairman for the Republican Party. I drove the district. I made speeches and gave talks and teachings in various cities throughout the district as I had opportunity and as I was invited. My plan is to do it a little bit different than has been done. I'm going to, as much as possible, should I be elected, work on doing town halls in some of the main cities in the district during the legislative session and even after. I know the district fairly well. I have a fairly good relationship with most of the political people in the district. So I would just continue doing that, traveling around the district. It is a big district. We drove it and made a video the other day, and we left at 6:45 in the morning. We visited all but Shoshone County, because I'd already visited Shoshone County, and came home at 11:15, traveling 550 miles.
That's so huge. I will say this, though. It's an awfully beautiful district. So
it is a beautiful district, yeah, no doubt.
Okay, Cornell, let's jump into issues here. What do you feel are the most important issues for you in this race?
Well, a couple of issues. I'd like to see the state be able to properly manage the lands and the borders here. So I'm going to be looking into, as we are doing at the county level, the good neighbor authority that the federal government has extended to states as an opportunity to maybe manage some of those lands in a manner that will protect them, utilize them in a multi-use manner, and not overuse or rape or pillage or anything, just take care of them properly, and maybe generate some funds for the state, which could offset some of the educational requirements, some of the education funds that seem to be that levies are every year, as I think you were mentioning that earlier, but levies, all the levies, the property levies that come up, and people have to pay for the funding in the local school districts that they have these levies. It would be nice if there was a state opportunity to fund some of them besides the, I believe the state budget is about two-thirds education, but if some of the state lands could be used in a proper manner to fund some of the education, I think that would help the property owners.
Okay. Any others that you would say?
Yeah, I would like to look at representation of everyone who would like to have certain bills heard. There's got to be a meeting of the minds where the chairman of the committees don't draw bills that they don't like, and yet we don't inundate the state legislature, which often hears upwards of 700 or 800 bills, looks at 700 or 800 bills. We don't inundate the state legislature, and yet each bill gets an RS number and has an opportunity to at least be heard in committee.
Yeah, that's the power that committee chairmen have.
It is, yes.
Sideline legislation,
right,
for even personal reasons. That
it can be,
yeah,
as a matter of fact.
Well, let's get into some other issues that are pretty topical right now, specifically the current situation we're in with the coronavirus response. Governor Little has suspended his stay-at-home order, and he's kicked off a reopening of the Idaho economy in four stages. We're in stage one right now, which is going to go through the 15th. And then there will be some additional stages that will open things up more gradually, including we'll finally get around to opening restaurant dining and gyms and hair salons in stage two. What do you think of the governor's plan?
Well, I think that for one thing, it would be nice if there was legislation that allowed the legislature to come back into session so that they could provide at least an advisory capacity to the governor. Not that any one of them is experts, but as you might have observed, Chris, there are people saying to wear a mask, and then the Surgeon General says, don't wear them. You're a fool if you do. So if you ask for it, if you ask four experts for their opinion, you will get five opinions. And so it might have been helpful for the governor to have the state legislature to help him wade through some of this so that they could represent their districts in a more effective manner than just having one person make this call. I would like to see it open faster. I believe that the economic and the mental and emotional fallout from these closures are going to be far in excess of what anybody is ready to understand. And most people don't know it, but 5 million people starved to death during the Great Depression in America. And we are looking at horrendous economic results. And everybody, the minute you start talking about economics, they think you want your grandmother to die, and that's not it at all. It's not a single issue. It's not a binary issue. It's not an either-or. Both things can be concerned. We can practice the new social distancing or physical distancing skills and all the other things that the CDC that makes sense are asking us to do, and yet we can get this state back open, and I think in a far faster manner than is going right now. It's crazy to me that the large corporations are being favored and the mom and pops aren't, and so you'll see I'll go to Walmart and they'll be, you know, almost like normal. And I'll go into a mom and pop that is one of the essential stores that's open, and it'll be pretty barren. It's like I would think that the smaller stores are just as smart as the corporations, and they can practice the same kinds of things that would protect the population and open for business. So I'd like to see it go a little faster, I guess is what I'm saying.
Yeah, and the economic pain that small businesses and individuals are feeling is certainly very real, and we're sure going to see more of it. Along those lines, the governor, about a little over a week ago, he announced his Idaho Rebounds program, which is providing grants at up to $300 million statewide for businesses that are in distress that missed out on the first federal programs. Your take on whether that's an appropriate measure for the governor to take?
I think it would be far more effective to simply allow businesses to get back open and begin spending their own funds as entrepreneurs to make a living. Where is this money coming from? It's coming from the federal government, and where they're getting it, they're printing it. I see this as another opportunity to put our grandchildren, our great-grandchildren, into serious debt. I think it would be more appropriate to let businesses decide on their own if they can operate in a safe manner, and if they can, they don't need. They will do just fine. Most of them will do just fine without borrowing money. They will just open back up, open for business, and hopefully be part of the recovery themselves.
Well, one more question on this subject before we move on. The legislature will come into session again in 2021. We'll certainly still be dealing with the coronavirus and its impacts. Well, what role do you see the legislature playing?
The legislature will be able to offer to the constitutional officers, especially the executive, the appropriate opinions and needs and desires of their districts, which are far different throughout the state. Idaho is blessed to have both urban centers and extreme rural centers, and they both, those two differences react to this, to any kind of illness, virus or whatever, the flu, differently. So rural people, as you well know, in Bonner County, we've had four cases and they've all recovered. Most of the rural counties in Idaho, 30 of them, are just like that. The ones that are struggling are the ones that had either large population centers or were exposed to incoming passengers from out of the area, especially from the New York area, who were infected with the virus, places like Blaine County, Ada County, Canyon County, etc. So I see the legislators playing, at least if nothing more, nothing else, an advisory capacity and eyes and ears on the ground, as it were, for the different districts that they represent.
Okay. Well, let's move on to another issue, education. It's the largest piece of the state's annual budget. Even so, Idaho ranks among the very lowest in the nation in its per pupil expenditures by the state. And that ends up requiring almost all the school districts to run supplemental levies, which hit on property owners. Do you think the state is funding its schools adequately, and do you see any other funding mechanism you'd like to see come into play?
Well, one thing I learned about budgets and funding when I became a county commissioner is that things looked far different from the outside than they did when I finally was given actual access to the budget. So for me to, and I'm not sidestepping it, I'll do what I can to answer your question, but for me to comment heavily on whether or not the state is funding education enough without ever having been part of the budgeting process at JFAC or anywhere else would be presumptuous at best. With that being said, it appears to me that the state is doing what it can to maintain the funding towards education that it can. As I mentioned earlier, our state lands may hold some of the answer to that through royalties and fees and grazing fees and et cetera that could offset some of the property burden for the property tax owners, which would be sort of an adjunct to the endowment lands, if you will. But to comment further on whether or not the state's funding education enough would actually require me to get into the actual intricacies of the budget itself, and I haven't been able to do that. So.
Yeah, you're speaking from experience, aren't you, from being on the budget-setting side of things as a commissioner?
Yeah, once you get in the budget and you actually have the agency heads come in and begin talking to you and you find out what their concerns are and you find out that, oh, my gosh, their concerns are real. Why golly? They're not just throwing money into the wind. They're actually fixing things and working on things. What part of these budgets can we maintain? What parts need to go? And when I was a county commissioner, the county budget was 181 pages. So it took time, and I believe that it will take time. It'll take some time for me to get up to speed on the budget. I'm pretty good with budgets, but I like Excel spreadsheets. I'm a nerd. So I think I'll be able to get up to speed quickly, but until I do, I feel less than adequate to offer an opinion on that.
Well, let's dig in just a little bit more on property taxes. The lawmakers, actually from both parties, they started out the 2020 session saying they wanted to come up with some property tax relief. They didn't advance any other legislation other than agreeing to create a committee to study the issue for another year and come back with some more ideas in 2021. I don't know if you have any other more specific ideas you might like to apply to the whole issue of the property tax burden that property owners are bearing.
Well, what I saw was some legislation that came out that would have frozen property taxes. And from a purely fiscal hawk perspective, I kind of applauded that. But then after being a county commissioner and seeing all the unfunded mandates that the state sent down to counties and said, well, we want you to do this, and oh, by the way, you get to pay for it, and now we're going to freeze your budget, that kind of... I would have had to sit in on the budget hearings and listen on the – I know our county commissioners listened in on conference calls and various and sundry communications that they had to help them understand what the state was doing with that. And they sent their concerns and their complaints, and I didn't get to see all of that. But that would have been very instructive. Just to freeze the property taxes, I don't think was a good idea. I would rather see that be accompanied by the state looking at ways to reduce the budget. The state has 188 agencies, individual agencies. It would be great to just start looking at each one of those agencies, find out at the county level, we were required by statute to look at every single agency every year we did a budget and say to, and actually make a determination if the agency was required, and if the agency was required, at what level we should fund it. That's something that the state could do as well, and maybe work on some zero-based budgeting. Because just to issue a property tax freeze may not completely take into consideration all the issues that municipalities and counties are facing with things that the state is requiring them to do.
Yeah, it's complicated, isn't it?
It is complicated. Mm-hmm. I wish it wasn't.
Okay, one more tax question. Lawmakers have debated for years whether to remove Idaho's sales tax from groceries, the 6% sales tax. It came up again this year in the legislature. Again, it was left unresolved. Would you be a yay or a nay on taxing groceries and food?
Okay, let me make sure I understood. Would I be a yay on taxing or a nay on taxing groceries and food?
Yeah.
I would be a nay. I'm good with removing the grocery tax.
Okay, good. All right, on to another topic here. So roads and highways are always a big state concern that the legislature deals with. They're helping set priorities and deciding funding. How do you feel the state is doing with its road and highway maintenance? And are you looking for any changes from the state transportation department?
So now that is an area I haven't studied at length. When I was a county commissioner, we had a road and bridge director early on that would actually take us on what you might call road trips and show us the things that he was planning. And he actually, with his engineer's background, would explain to us such things as, and this airplane will land, Chris, he would explain to us such things as, this particular road is gravel and it needs to stay gravel because the number of cars that travel over this road don't push the maintenance beyond what will be appropriate to a gravel road. Certain roads, once they hit a certain level of traffic, now the state doesn't have to worry about that, but it's similar. Once they hit a certain level of traffic, it becomes important to actually pave them because the paving costs more at the beginning, but the maintenance becomes far less for a period of up to 20 years. So the state, I'm sure, has people like that are looking at each individual road, each individual bridge that the state is responsible for. So if I get an opportunity to be involved in that, I'd be delighted to sit down and with the managers and the engineers and understand their requests and their requirements and why, and bring in to bear some of the things that I learned at the county level to see if the infrastructure is being adequately supported. Without actually, I know this sounds like I'm running again, and I'm not, but without actually being involved in those discussions, that's a fairly complicated issue as well, because you're talking about years of service for particular types of road and when they're nearing the end of their service, when they're nearing the end of their maintenance requirements, and when maintenance changes on them, bridges as well. I know they're fixing a bridge just south of town in Westmond, and so obviously that bridge had come to the end of its service life without requiring some major renovation. I'd need to know more about their parameters for that. But that being said, I think the state does a reasonably good job on the infrastructure, the road infrastructure.
Well, let's take up a couple of what I consider hot button issues from the last legislature, insofar as they took up a lot of time and discussion in the legislature.
Okay.
One was a bill that actually passed this year concerning child marriage. Idaho law has allowed children as young as 14 to marry with their parents' consent, raising concerns that some parents might allow or even force their underage children, say a daughter, to marry a much older man. The bill this year set a minimum age of 16 and restricts 16 and 17-year-olds to marrying someone within 3 years of their own age. It passed the legislature, and it was signed by the governor, yet there was some pretty stiff opposition to it in the legislature. Would you have favor of or opposed this bill?
That's a tough one, because a 14-year-old marrying a 15-year-old is just creepy, and that's probably not the right thing for a politician to say, but it's just creepy. But I don't know. I'm reluctant to be someone who restricts parental rights. That's a slippery slope. It just flat is. And when you start going down that road, everything becomes prey to legislation. That's something I didn't follow. I'd have to sit and think about that. Maybe get some counsel from both legislators who dealt with it and from attorneys who've dealt with some of these things. It'd be good to know those aspects. But I didn't follow it. I'm sorry, Chris. Those weren't things that I was paying attention to.
Okay. Well, here's another hot button one, which you may or may not have followed. Transgender rights came up in the legislature in a big way and consumed a lot of the session and discussion. Ultimately, the legislature passed, and Governor Little signed, two bills. One bans transgender girls from playing on girls and women's sport teams, and the other prohibits transgender people from changing their gender on their Idaho birth certificate. What position would you have had on these? Or kind of social issues that might be
yeah.
the thing that pop up down there.
Okay, so I would have voted, let me think about how you asked the question. I think girls should play in girls' sport. Chromosomal girls should play in girls' sports, and chromosomal boys should play in boys' sports. And if transgenders want to have an opportunity to show their athleticism, they should have a transgender league. I don't even know if that was considered. But so I would have voted yes, I think. I didn't follow that either, but if there was a bill that said girls should play in girls' sports and boys should play in boys' sports, I would have voted yes on that.
And then the other one that came up was changing gender on their birth certificate.
Gender, sex doesn't change. There's no science behind that. So I'd be for continuing to properly catalog what people are.
Well, that's our list of questions. We have time for a closing statement. What would you like to tell voters as they consider who they're going to vote for?
What I would like to tell voters is to just do your best to do the research you need to do, and call and email the people that are running for office. Don't be afraid to ask them any question. If they won't answer it, at least find out why they won't answer it. But more than anything, let's go back to being neighborly Idahoans to one another. This virus has raised some serious concerns in our state about how we treat one another. And I would just like us I'd just like to see Idahoans treat each other with the respect and the kindness that has been something that I've observed since my childhood. This is a place where people come, and they come into my store and they say, people say hi to me on the street. We've never experienced this. Let's keep it up. Keep it up, Idaho. That's what I would say.
Well, Cornar Razor, Republican candidate for District 7 State Representative, thanks again for talking with us.
Thank you, Chris.
If you've just tuned in, this is Community Conversations on 88.5 KRFY, and today we're airing interviews with the Republican candidates for state representative in District 7 who will be on the ballot for the May 19th primary election. We've just heard from candidate Cornell Razor. Now we talk with his opponent on the ballot, Charlie Shepard. Charlie Shepard, Republican candidate for District 7 state representative, thank you for talking with us today. How are you today?
Doing real well. It's a beautiful day.
Beautiful day. Now, you're down near Riggins, correct?
Correct, yeah. We're just over the time zone bridge here, mile, and the very south end of the District 7 area.
Well, Riggins is a really cool place, so you're living in a great place to start with. Let's start out with an introduction for voters up here in the northern part of your district who aren't well acquainted with you. Why don't you tell us about your background and any qualifications you think will be helpful in your job?
Okay. I was born in Idaho, born and raised. lived here my whole life. I've never lived in any other state. I've, you know, traveled to a few for a short time, but been in the workforce since I graduated from high school here at Salmon River. I graduated here in Riggins in 1986. Went right into the workforce. Well, I went to a semester of college and decided that wasn't for me, so I went right into the workforce. I worked in the woods logging for 10 years and met my wife and got married. Been married for 25 years, raised four kids. About 20 years ago, I started a small sawmill business, and me and my brother and my dad incorporated that into a log home building business, and I did that for 20 years. And about the same time I started that, I started coaching football and basketball here at Salmon River High School. So I've been a coach for 18 years, and in that 18 years, I won two state titles in basketball, and I won five state titles in football. I sent four of my football players on to play in college ball. And then, of course, most people know Leighton Vander Esch. He actually went on and is playing for the Dallas Cowboys now, drafted in the first round. So I had tremendous success in my coaching career, and I think that gave me a lot of experience in how to work with people and get stuff done as a team, you might say.
Okay. So, prime question I always like to ask, why are you running?
Well, you know, two reasons for sure. One is, you know, Dad, my father, Paul, has been the representative for District 7 for the last 16 years, and he's worked so hard to, you know, maintain the conservative values that District 7 likes to uphold, and I just kind of want to help him, his legacy, and keep it going for all the hard work he did and what he accomplished. And then two, I'm not the type that is going to sit around and hope and expect somebody else to get the job done. I've kind of always been the type that if I want something done, I'm going to jump in there and do it myself. So I figured that, you know, with Dad stepping down and having a little bit of name recognition along with the influence that the name brings that he's got and as I have as a coach, maybe I can use that influence to sway some of the people down there at the legislature to kind of fall in line with some of our needs here at District 7.
You know, let's follow up that. District 7 is a heck of a long district. It stretches from up here just south of Sandpoint all the way down to, you know, below Riggins. How do you envision, you know, representing folks? I know that folks up here may feel like they're a little disenfranchised from their legislators because it's such a big district.
You know, I've been up against that, you know, pretty much my whole coaching career because being the smallest school in the Idaho to field a football team, we don't get a lot of respect. And so what we had to do as a program to achieve the success is we just had to work harder and go against the odds. And so our district being, in my opinion, structured as it is, we got very little respect from, you know, the major populated areas in the state when it came to district in the way they did. So to me, that becomes more of a challenge and more of a reason to prove them wrong that we, as our three counties with a little tiny bit of the one, that we can come together and still get something accomplished. And I look forward to the challenge of working with all three counties and the, you know, the little bit of Bonner County there to show them down in the valley that we still matter.
Well, let's push on to issues that are happening right now in the state and that you'll be dealing with as a state legislators. What do you feel are the most important issues that you identify for this race?
Well, this coronavirus has kind of changed the thinking a little bit of what used to be our main priorities. I think now with experiencing what we've experienced, there's some new ones that need to be addressed right away. And one of them is I don't like the way that individual liberties and our constitutional rights just kind of disappeared when this virus started. At no time do I feel that there's an appropriate reason to take people's individual rights away. I totally understand they wanted to protect the citizens and what they thought was the best for the citizens, but I've got more faith in the individual using their own common sense to do what's best for them without harming their neighbor. And I just want, I want to get down there and see if there's some way we can make sure that we protect the individual's constitutional rights in crisis, because I think that there's been serious damage done by big government, as well as a little bit by our state government, in stepping on people's toes and businesses and kind of, like I say, taking over people's rights. And I don't like that at all.
Well, to follow up on that one, Governor Brad Little has suspended his stay-at-home order now, and he's kicked off a reopening of Idaho's economy in four stages. We're just going through stage one right now, which allows more businesses to open, and then they'll get into stage two after May 15th and progress through these stages so long as the virus caseload keeps declining, according to the governor's plan. What do you think of the governor's plan?
I think the governor has done pretty good with a scenario that's unprecedented. And of course, hindsight's always 20/20. It's way easier to say this is what we should have done and so on and so forth. But as far as what he's done, I think he's done pretty good. I question a little bit of his reopening plan, because to me, I don't know who picks and chooses what businesses are safe to open and what businesses aren't safe to open. I think, again, they should leave that to the individual that's going to use those businesses, such as restaurants, hair salons, and stuff. If somebody doesn't feel comfortable about going into one of those places, they don't have to go into. But there's plenty of people out there that are comfortable, and to tie the hands of those businesses, I just don't think's right. But for the most part, I think the governor has done a fairly decent job. But again, we got to make sure that there's a time limit on how long he can keep things locked up. And I think the way it stands right now, there is no set time limit. He can pretty much do what he wants for as long as he wants. And I find that to be a little bit concerning.
So along this line, the other big news that came out just last week, the governor announced a program called Idaho Rebounds, which is giving grants of up to $300 million statewide to businesses that are in distress and they missed the federal funding. Do you think this has been a good measure for the governor to take?
Under these circumstances, yes, I do think it's a good. And the reason why is because these small businesses weren't shut down because they made poor business decisions or because they were, you know, not good businessmen. They were shut down because they were forced to by our government. So that being said, it makes sense for me, for the government to step in and help these businesses weather the storm and get back on their feet. But the problem with it is, and it is with all government spending, is that money has to come from somewhere. And eventually, the taxpayer is going to have to bear that burden again. But I think it's fair under the circumstances to help these small businesses out, because it doesn't help anybody, our economy, our tax base, nothing, if we have small businesses go broke because they were forced out of business by the policies of our state government.
Okay, well, let's get on to some other issues. Let's talk about education. Education is the largest piece of the state's annual budget, but even so, Idaho ranks among the very lowest in the nation in its per pupil expenditures by the state. And what the effect has been is almost all the school districts in the state are now running supplemental levies. So the question would be, do you feel the state is funding schools adequately at this point?
The funding issue, whether it's adequate or not, is a really tough call. I think there's some schools out there that budget their money better than others, and so the funding is adequate for them. I think there's schools out there that don't, aren't as frugal as they could be, but I don't think there's any arguing that the schools could definitely use more money. But I am not at all a fan of raising taxes to get it. What I am a fan of is we need to utilize our natural resources, especially in this district, way more than we're using them. There is a lot of opportunity out there to have plenty of funding for our schools if we utilize the timber industry and the mining industry and the ranching. And there's lots of money just going to waste, or in the Forest Service case, they're burning it up instead of using that to fund our schools. And if we would utilize our natural resources to the fullest, we could lessen the tax burden on the landowners that are paying these school levies year after year after year. We could cut them in half. But there is no easy answer on if the schools are funded adequately or not, because there's too many variables and there's too many differences between the school districts. But I would be aligned to say that the schools could definitely use more funding, but not at the taxpayer's expense.
Okay, well, let's stay on taxes for a second, specifically property taxes. The legislators from both parties started out this year's session, the 2020 session, saying they wanted to reduce property taxes and take some of that burden off of property owners. But the legislation that they were working on didn't advance. The lawmakers ended up agreeing to create a committee to study the issue for another year and come back with more ideas in 2021. Do you have any proposals that relate to property tax relief?
You know, I'm just not educated in that subject enough to know what is feasible and what's feasible, because it's been my experience that if you take money from one spot, they're going to turn around and get it from somewhere else, and the end result is you're still paying the same amount of tax, they're just putting a different name on it. But I do see places where we could generate more revenue by taxing what I call out-of-state millionaires and billionaires that are buying up huge chunks of Idaho's private land to use for their own playground. And when they do that, they're not using it for grazing, they're not using it for timber, they're not using it for anything that's going to generate income for the local communities and for the schools. And so we could come up with another form of taxation for what I call those playgrounds for the rich, you might say, and either force them into using that property to generate income, either through the timber or through the grazing or something, or just make them have to pay a higher tax rate so they are more apt to sell it and get it back into the local economy's funds. But it's a very complex issue. I at no time want to see any taxes raised. I always would like to see them lowered, but it's a very... Again, it's just a very complex issue.
Okay. Well, I do have another tax question here for you. Lawmakers have debated for years whether to remove Idaho's 6% sales tax on groceries, specifically food. It came up again this year at the legislature, was still left unresolved. Are you a yay or nay on taxing groceries?
The one thing it kind of doesn't make sense to me is we want to feed the hungry, the people that are less fortunate, and we want to give them a break and give them every opportunity to have success with the budget that's given them. The one thing they absolutely need is food. And so right off the top, you're going to help our lower income residents if you take that tax off of groceries. And so that, I think, is a good thing. And nobody, in my opinion, gets hurt by doing that, because even rich people have to eat, so they're getting a benefit by not having to have that tax on groceries also. So I would be in favor of taking away the grocery tax, the 6%. Again, though, I'm more times than not in favor of any kind of tax break.
Okay. On to a new issue. Let's talk about roads, because that's another big concern that the state legislature deals with is our maintenance and construction of highways. How do you think the state's doing? Are you looking for any changes in operations of our transportation system?
Well, you ask how I think the state's doing. I'm not a big fan of the way that the Idaho Department of Transportation, what's the nice way of saying it? They don't utilize their resources to the fullest. I see too much waste in the department. I think they could be more efficient with their time, more efficient with their equipment, and that in itself would give them a bigger budget to take that money and put it into the repairs that are needed. But as far as the road, for instance, the main corridor, the 95 corridor that goes from Boise to, you know, to Sandpoint, that has got to be a priority for expansion, because every day we get more and more people in this state, and that's the only artery through this country. If we don't start invest money in that, it's going to be a mess. Anybody that's traveled between Boise and McCall on Highway 55 in summertime, I mean, they're seeing it right now. You'll have 2 and 3 hour traffic jams on Fridays and Sundays. I mean, it's just an absolute nightmare. And if we don't dedicate and make that a priority, you're going to see it on Highway 95 in these bottleneck areas. So we definitely need to allocate some money towards transportation.
Well, I think we have time for maybe one more question here. One bill that passed this year in the Idaho legislature concerned child marriage. I don't know if you're up to speed on that, but the bill sets a minimum marriage age of 16 and restricts 16 and 17-year-olds to marrying someone within 3 years of their age. That did pass the legislature. It was signed by the governor, but there was some debate and some folks opposed that bill, actually. The current law allows children as young as 14 to be married, as long as their parents consent. Did you have a position on this issue?
That issue hits pretty close to home with me, because first off, I believe in freedom more than I believe in just about anything else. Freedom is the most valuable thing we have. And you have to let people have the freedom to make the wrong decision once in a while. But that being said, there is a difference between adult and adolescent, or, you know, you might think you have it all figured out when you're 13 and 14 and 15, just like I did. And then all of a sudden you hit 25 and you figured out that you weren't near as smart as you thought you were. So I think it was probably a good idea, probably not a bad law that they passed that. I'm not sure it was necessary, because most of the time, people think they want to get married and don't carry through with it. But I had a sister that, because of certain circumstances, mistakes made, that got married real young like that. And it, of course, it wasn't the most ideal situation. But now they've been married for almost 30 years. They've raised 4 wonderful kids. Everything worked out great. So, again, I'm not real sure the government should be stepping in and telling people what they can and can't do or should do. But at the same time, I don't think it's one of them laws that's going to be too harmful to too many people. But, again, the most important thing that we have as citizens of this country is our freedom. And I don't like to see anything chip away at that freedom.
Okay. Well, actually, I think we can squeeze in one more question because there was another hot button issue that came up in the legislature, and it was on transgender rights. A lot of discussion consumed a lot of the legislative session this year. Ultimately, the legislature passed, and Governor Little signed two bills, one that bans transgender girls from playing on girls and women's sports teams, and the other prohibits transgender people from changing their gender on Idaho birth certificates. What do you feel about these, and how might you have voted on these bills?
I would have supported both of them emphatically, you might say, because being a coach and being a girls' track coach, it is, to me, it is just unbelievably insensitive for, say, take a senior girl in high school who's worked hard to try to win a state title, and then all those chances are taken away because a transgender girl comes in who's superior physically and wins that state title and takes it away from her. It's just inexcusable to me that they anywhere that they're letting that happen. And then as far as the birth certificate thing, you are what you're born. You know, you can change it later, but you still can't change what you were born. That is how you were born, and it should be stated that way. So I emphatically support both of those decisions by the legislature.
Okay, well, that's our list of questions. We're about out of time, but we do have a minute or so for a closing statement. Charlie Shepard, Republican candidate for District 7 State Representative. Do you have any closing remarks you'd like to let the voters know about?
I just, you know, if they choose to vote for me, they just need to know that the only promise I'm going to make to them is that when I get down there, I'm going to work hard to do what I think's best for the voters of District 7. I've never been in politics, I mean, other than coaching. I guess coaching is sort of being in politics, but I've never held office. I'm going down there with a lot of energy and quite a bit of knowledge of problems that face our district. And I think with the influence I have, either through myself or through my dad before me, I think I could get a lot done for the district. And my opponent, he's a good guy. I think he's got, you know, a good philosophy also. I just think that I probably have just a little bit more influence down at the state house, and influence is a big thing down there. You get a lot more done if people respect you and know you. So the voters got a tough decision to make. They got two good candidates, which is a breath of fresh air, because too many times in the past, you've had to vote for the less of two evils. So I ask you for your vote, and I appreciate your vote, and we'll just see it how it unfolds.
Charlie Shepard, thank you very much for talking with us.
Thank you.
That's our show for today. Again, another big reminder, you may vote only by absentee ballot in this primary election. You must file a request for your absentee ballot, either online or by mail, by May 19th. The ballot must be returned by June 2nd. Go request a ballot now at www.bonnercountyid.gov or www.idahovotes.gov, or get details and information at sandpointonline.com. I'm Chris Bessler, and I've been the host today for this edition of Community Conversations on 88.5 KRFY. I'll be back next Thursday at 8 a.m. when we'll air interviews with Sandpoint Mayor Shelby Ronstadt and City Administrator Jennifer Stapleton. There are a lot of city issues and happenings to cover, so be sure to tune in. Thanks for listening.